It's pretty easy, you know, when you obey and respect God, coming together as people, it doesn't get any more special than that. It's amazing what the instructions that he gives us and following those does in our lives as we journey through this life. And I thought, as I started working on this message a couple months ago, and then I started looking at the calendar and realized this will match up really well for the weekend. It'll be a good thing to go over. So when we think about God and designing marriage and how he works with us, you know, marriage is one of the greatest blessings that he has given to us from a physical sense, something that we can experience. But he didn't create marriage just to make us happy. He didn't create marriage that we would be fulfilled with something, some desire that we have. When we look at what he was doing with us and we look how God works, he was very pointed. He was very direct with what he is creating because he's teaching us about family. He's teaching us about his love, and he uses it to help us grow. He helps us to develop. He shapes us. He refines us. He's changing our character. He's transforming us to look like Jesus Christ, to be like Jesus Christ. And it teaches us on a physical sense about the family, but it also, in a greater aspect, it teaches us about the family of God, what God is actually creating. Marriage is a good thing, and we often hear people say, they bring out the best in me. They bring out the best in me. But what does that really mean? When we think about it, when in marriage, when two people are happily married, things are going well, and they say, they bring out the best in me. What do you think of? What do you think of? Because there's instructions in the Bible that help us in understanding what marriage is. All right? It's very clear. It's one of the greatest images that we have of two people becoming one. God says you are no longer individuals, but you are now bound together. You are inseparable, unified. It's a beautiful thing when we think about it, because it's the same exact thing that he is bringing us into with the relationship with him. You know, Christ was very clear of, I am one with the Father. The Father is one with me. I want you to join us in this oneness. And so would God give us marriage as an understanding of how this works, how this plays out on a physical sense. And so it becomes very impactful for us. So I've got a couple questions for you, though. Does that mean that this is automatic? As soon as our vows are made, our mate's perfect. You got some chuckles, right? What about, does it happen by accident? We just found the one. They were the one that made everything work in the marriage. Is it just a matter of good chemistry? True love. I always picture Beauty and the Beast, the three women, as they're fawning over Gaston, fanning themselves. Is it just chemistry? Unfortunately, it's not. It's not. But it is a result that we can create. Good choices, attitudes, behaviors, all of these things that Jesus Christ reflected. And he's trying to teach us. And you can talk to anybody who's been married for any length of time, and they'll tell you that marriage is work. Marriage is hard work at times, and it takes effort, and it takes energy, and we have to be purposeful with what we're doing and how we're doing it, what we are creating. When we do marriage correctly, what we find out is all relationships make a lot more sense. On just the base level, they make a lot more sense. It works on the inverse of that, too. You know, as we grow up and we have relationships, we have healthy relationships with parents, with siblings, with friends, with other adults. The relationships start to fall into place when they're healthy, and we learn what marriage can look like through those. We learn what we want out of a spouse, the character traits that we like to have. It's amazing how the same spiritual principles apply across the board everywhere when we talk about relationships. Kind of like somebody knew what they were doing when they created all of this. Surprise, surprise, right? God knew what he was doing. He's very intent on getting us to a specific spot with specific things that we can do. And marriage is one of those great things that we have. So I want to take a look at today of a few ways that we can bring the best out in our spouse. a few ways that we can bring the best out in our spouse. Point number one, help each other feel good about yourselves, or each other, whichever way you want to phrase it. Help each other feel good about yourselves. You know, when we think about words, words can have a heavy impact. They can have a very heavy impact. All right, let's take it one step further. Not can, words do have a heavy impact. There's no getting around it. They impact us on a level that we sometimes wish they didn't. We take things to heart, and it sometimes cuts deep, or it can build us up, make us feel real good. Simply put, words are powerful. Words are very powerful, and people thrive when they are encouraged, not being torn down. We're going to go through some things today that support that. I've got a couple studies. I'm not going to get into all the details now, but when we start to look at this, we see how quickly this applies not only inside of our marriages, but across the board. We think about the families, friends, children, coworkers. Every relationship that we have in our life starts to be impacted by the way we carry ourselves, by the way we treat other people, the way we talk to other people. So if you would turn with me over to Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 23. You know, this section here in Proverbs is set up to describe a wholesome life, a good life. And they use parallelism in this, and it's structured as a six-verse parallel. You will see this as we read through this, but the six Proverbs of this section, they don't have a single theme, but they describe types of activity that may either promote or undermine a wholesome life, something that's good. And these are just good core principles of how we should be, what takes place in our lives. So if you look at this in Proverbs chapter 12, starting in verse 23, it says, "A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. The lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death." Your spouse should be the safest place in your life. Your spouse should be that person that builds you up, that helps you to have a better connection with God, to have a stronger connection and relationship with God. It should be a safe place, not the source of harshest criticism, harsh words. You know, when we think about what happens in this parallel here in verse 25, it compares anxiety with joy. It talks about the pressure of anxiety that it puts on a person, leading to depression, a state that we don't ever want to find ourselves in, because depression has a much larger impact than just being depressed. It changes our life completely. But he compares that to the joy. He says, but good words make our heart glad. So those good words can be uplifting. It combats that depression. He says, that's what gets us into a good relationship. So we have to be diligent to think about the words that we speak, the phrases that we use, the tones that we use, and how we're communicating with each other, how we communicate with our spouse. Do we build confidence in our spouse, or do we slowly erode it? Some words are so harsh that there's nothing slow about it. It's like bringing a sledgehammer down on their foot. Just cripples them immediately. Right? Excruciating pain, hurt. They're stuck. You can't walk on your foot. It takes time to heal. That's what harsh words can do. Right? That's the symbolism that we have to think about. There's a major difference in lifting people up and building them up versus destroying them. So we see how this applies not only in marriage, but we're going to have this focus on marriage today because it's a fun weekend. We do have a wedding. It's an exciting time, something that God ordained and condoned, something that He created. But this does work on friends and coworkers and children, families, strangers, because words impact everybody the same. Whether you're checking out at the grocery store or it's somebody that you've known for 50 years, words can have a major impact. And they can either flourish when you speak encouraging words to them, or you can make them have the worst day that they've had in a long time. But what helps in every situation interaction is thinking about, how is this person coming away from my conversation with them? And that's what we have to do. Every time we're having a conversation, every time we're having a discussion with somebody, we have something to say to them. We have to think about, are they feeling heavier? Are they feeling weight? Are they feeling pressure? Are they feeling uplifted? Have I removed a burden from them? Am I helping them on their journey? Have I made their life easier? And those are the types of things we have to think about in every situation that we find ourselves in. Point number two, embrace who the other person really is. Embrace who the other person really is. For one, in order to help somebody to be the best that they can be, to bring out the best in someone, they have to feel like they can be their real self. They can be genuine. They can be honest. For those of you who are not married yet, you cannot go into marriage thinking you're going to change somebody. It is not a good way to start off, and it tends to not end in good results. If that's your goal of fixing somebody or changing their character, a major character trait of who they are, you're biting off a lot. You're really biting off a lot. At the end of the day, we're not going to majorly change somebody, but we can help embrace who they are. And hopefully in marriage, when in relationships, as you're working through just general relationships, you're finding the qualities that you appreciate, the things that you value, the things that make you happy, the types of people that you like to be around. If you would turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 16 with me. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 16. It's a short verse here. If you can both let down your guards and be your complete self, you know, the flaws, the quirks, all of it, doesn't matter how goofy you are, if you're not honest about who you actually are, it's going to be really hard. You know, when you start accepting that, that means you become at ease. There's a peace that comes with that. There's an acceptance. There's a comfort. You know, feeling like you have to hide parts of who you are, hide parts of what makes you you, it becomes exhausting. And it's honestly unsustainable. It's completely unsustainable. And when we feel loved about who we really are, we're in a optimal position to actually be the best we can be. You'll naturally want to do better. When you're encouraged, when you're built up, we do want to do better, don't we? I can tell you, anytime in marriage, my wife is amazing, and the better she is, the more she is awesome at everything, the more I try to aspire to be like that. I want to be equivalent to her and try to match that. And so it's amazing what we can do with each other, how we can actually rise and raise the bar to a level. If you've ever been in sports, if you've ever done anything that takes active growth and development, that's how it is, right? You keep pushing the bar higher and higher and higher until you get to that point. But you have to feel supported. And this is what it says there in 1 Corinthians 16. If you look at verse 13, started talking and quit turning. It says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong, let all that you do be done with love. Let all that you do be done with love. Marriage isn't about fixing each other. It's not about changing that person. If that's our approach, you are in a very long, rough ride. It's going to be a hardship every step, because you're never going to be happy with each other, because one's always going to feel like they're harped on, that they're trying to be changed, they're trying to be molded, and the other one's not happy with where you're at, the progress that you've made. It becomes very toxic. Marriage is all about creating an environment where both people feel safe to grow, to grow stronger in their relationship together and grow stronger in their relationship with God, something that's grounded. You know, modern psychology and neuroscience strongly support this. There's research that backs this, and this biblical principle that we find in the Bible of acceptance and the growth that can come out of that. We think about how Christ interacted with people. He didn't just tear people down all the time. Those who were going through the hardships, those who were sinning, he didn't club them. He didn't beat them, berate them. He always course corrected them. He always helped them. He said, this is where I want you to be. Let me help you get there. There was always a gentleness to that, because that promotes growth. That promotes growth, and that's what he wants from us. Research over many years has proven couples feel emotionally safe. They experience that. They experience a greater empathy, better conflict resolution, and a stronger intimacy. And those are just some simple things that it creates. Emotional safety is created when your spouse feels they can be themselves without the fear of ridicule, without being put down, without punishment, and without withdrawal. And that's sometimes the hardest one. You know, when you see or feel somebody removing themselves from you, that hurts sometimes more than the words, more than the actions. Is when you know that they don't even want to be near you because of the negative impact that is being created. That's why we have to be so careful about what we're doing. When we feel accepted, our nervous system actually calms us. There's a sense of peace that we have, which allows us to show our best self. So when accepted, we literally become calmer, wiser, and kinder. We become emotionally available. Emotionally pliable. There's a study out there that shows that partners who feel fully known are 32% more likely to describe their marriage as deeply satisfying. Partners who feel fully known, fully understood, are 32% more likely to describe their marriage as deeply satisfying. When we think about how God designed us, he created us to be authentic, to really be who we are, not hiding behind masks, not hiding who we are, what we want to act like. My congregation here knows, I've told them, you know, growing up, I was in and out of the church all through high school and my college years, and who I was around my friends at school was completely different than who I was at church. I had two separate lives. It was just like wearing a mask, and it was easy because the two never crossed paths. That's not as easy in our relationships, in our marriages especially, though those relationships, they're with us all over the place, all the time, and so we have to be genuinely who we are. And so we should want to do everything we can to create security for our spouse. Create that security so that there's an environment created so that they can grow, that they can be the best. That they want to be the best. Point number three, encouraging growth. And these kind of build on each other and bind together. Point number three is encouraging growth. When we think about our marriages, healthy marriages aren't static. They don't stall out. They don't plateau. They don't just sit there. And they are the same. They're supposed to improve. And it's the same thing as healthy Christians. Healthy Christians aren't stagnant. God is constantly trying to teach us, trying to instruct us, guide us, help us to grow spiritually, mentally, emotionally. Our marriages want to be the same thing. We have a deeper connection with our spouse, which means we have to be purposeful. There has to be intent behind it. I've got the iron sharpening iron from Proverbs 27 up here. It's one of the finest things that we have, and when we talk about, you know, developing our Christianity, you know, iron sharpening iron. But that spurs healthy spiritual growth, but that also helps us to become better people, better spouses, better siblings. We want to be better in all aspects of our life. Now, that doesn't mean we embrace unhealthy traits. It doesn't mean we embrace sin. Right? There's a degree that we do this, but we're talking about encouraging healthy growth, things that we can do better. If you flip over to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 with me. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. We often use this scripture in reference to gathering on the Sabbath, you know, when the entire body is called together by God for a very specific purpose. And he's calling his children. He's the one that sets up this meeting that we have today. We don't have to invite him here. We don't have to ask him to be here with us. He's literally already here, and he said, I want you to be here. So we know that he's here. And he's calling all of us together so that we can be part of a bigger purpose. Maybe we can be part of that family. But look at how this is put. I love how we tie this in when we think about the Sabbath and coming together each week before him. Look what this says of why we're coming together. What is one of the main purposes? Well, we know it is to receive the same message. So we're getting into his word. We're learning together. We're studying the Bible together. Part of it's we oftentimes have snacks or a meal together. But there's another point here. Look at Hebrews 10. And we'll pick this up in verse 22. It says, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith. All right, we trust, we know that God's here. We know he has asked us to be here. It says, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. He's going to do what he says. He's given us the guarantee. And then he tells us why in verse 24. He says, and let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. He says, stir up these things, love and good works. He says, this is the people that I want you to be, the example that I want you to be to the entire world, in your personal relationships, in your marriages, in your families, in your individual communities. He goes, I want you to do these things. That stirring up, it is a active encouragement, forward motion. He says, go and do this. So many times in the Bible, we see him instructing the disciples around him. We know he sent many of them out at different times to go do things. He always encouraged people to grow and develop spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, all for positive change. Something good, something healthy. Positive encouragement increases dopamine. That's the brain's motivation and reward chemical. Video game producers have really figured this out. And video games, the reason they have so many levels, so many achievements, is because every time you accomplish anything, you get some type of accolade. You've completed a mission, you've moved on to the next, they give you a little reward. Because every time you complete that, in your brain, dopamine hit. And instead of being able to shut it off and turn it off, that dopamine goes, no, 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 I want more. Motivation. Let's keep this going. So video game producers and developers have mastered this. They figured it out, how to keep people locked in. And it's like that across the board with many different things. But what research has found is that people are significantly more likely to take on new challenges when someone they trust expresses belief in them. Going back to that encouragement, right? If we build our spouse up and say, I have full faith that you can do this thing, that dopamine hit gives them the confidence that they can take on that challenge. They can grow and aspire to that next level. They can be that person that you think they can be, that they want to be, right? We're not trying to make them be somebody different. We're not trying to change them, but we're encouraging them for who they are, for what they want to accomplish. And we can help them to have that. It's pretty amazing how God built us inside and out. all the little pieces of us that even science doesn't fully understand, right? We have a good grasp on a lot of our chemistry and physiology of how it works. And it's amazing, the more we find out, the more we see, oh, there's a very good purpose for this. It's amazing when we start looking at the details of how God created us. Encouragement activates neural circuits associated with confidence, learning, and resilience. The things that we need to actually do better. It plays hand in hand with one another of how we develop and how we go about. So when you believe in your spouse, when you build, whether it's your spouse or friends or children, anybody, their brains are literally more willing to grow, more willing to develop, more willing to strive for something greater, something better, to become better. It literally rewires their brain to help them do the things that they want to accomplish. There's some research done by Dr. Sue Johnson, and she based this on emotionally focused therapy in combination with therapy and attachment theory. What she found is that humans grow best when they feel safe, supported, and emotionally connected. The secure-based relationship gives a person confidence to take risks, to try new things, and grow. This is the quote from Dr. Johnson. She writes, "When a relationship feels secure, our nervous system relaxes, and we become more open to growth and learning." What we end up finding through these studies is security, safety, produces strength, and that strength translates into producing growth. So by supporting them, we're actually helping them grow. We're helping them to want to grow, to be able to do better. This becomes one of the harder ones. Point number four, don't avoid tough issues. Don't avoid tough issues. The reason this becomes one of the hardest things is most of us don't like to deal with negative things. We don't like tough issues. But at the end of the day, marriage isn't all about just fun and joy. Reality sets in pretty quick. Whether it's shortly before the honeymoon, during the honeymoon, or shortly after the honeymoon, we find out that real life sets in. Real life produces real hard challenges, real hard trials at times. Now, God does want us to succeed. He wants to see us through all of these things, but the reality is, in a world that is run by Satan, that is influenced by the demonic realm, influenced by human nature, it just gets hard at times, and we aren't able to just completely block that out. Sometimes we get sucked into that. We have our own human nature that we battle, that we're working on getting out of our systems. But God wants us to flourish, and that means we have to tackle these tough issues head on sometimes. We have to address them and approach them. We can't hide from them. Hiding from them doesn't do any good. And so when we start to look back at all these other points, the self-confidence that is building through all of these other aspects of marriage and building up our spouse, that self-confidence is really going to be a driving point for dealing with these tough issues. Because as we build up our spouses, what it does is we get to a point where we see that assertiveness goes hand in hand with this. And when we become assertive, that is a game changer for addressing the tough things in life, the things that nobody really wants to talk about, working through conflicts in a productive way. Because what happens if you're not afraid to bring some of these topics up, if you're not afraid that your spouse is going to blow up, have a meltdown, they're not going to use these harsh words, they're not going to belittle you, berate you, but they are in this together with you and they want to solve these things, it'll work out. It'll start to work out. And it may take time. Again, we can go back to not may. It will take time, especially for the tough, tough situations. It takes a lot of time. But what it does, it creates a dynamic relationship with dynamic attitudes where it welcomes discussions. Heart-to-heart conversations, open dialogue, and it allows you to be able to ask what you need from your partner in a marriage relationship and allows them to be able to ask you and open up about what they need in a true and honest relationship. It has to be that open communication and open dialogue. The strong couples don't ignore the hard things. They don't avoid conflict. They resolve it. They handle it, just like Christ would. And you can turn back to Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25 with me. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. I didn't go to Matthew 18. You know, Matthew 18 is one of the primary places we go when we talk about conflict resolution, especially within the church itself. And it's amazing when we look at that, when somebody has sinned, done something wrong against us, it gives a very detailed description of how we handle that. You go to your brother, talk to them openly. And if that doesn't work, you take a witness, somebody who experienced it, not somebody that you told about it, somebody who actually witnessed it. And then if that doesn't work, you take another witness, right? God's got this methodology to his plan and how he works through these things. And so it's a pretty impressive system when we see how the reconciliation process has to take place and what God has implemented to help us do this. It's all about balance. It's all about being honest with open communication, with proof and evidence that support situations of how things happen. But here in Ephesians chapter 4, if you look at verse 25, here it says, therefore, putting away lying, right? There has to be an honest discussion about this. It has to be truth. It says, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. I've had questions come up about this at times in the past. Does this literally mean a resolution about every situation has to be made before you go to bed, before sunset? If you have problems with that, you might want to move to Alaska. You get about a 2-month period where there's no sunset. You can let that fester for 2 months before dealing with it. Right, we can play all these legalistic games, but when we look at Scripture, when we try to actually understand, okay, what is he talking about? What is God saying here about not letting the sun set on our wrath? He means you do have to deal with these things. You do have to deal with them. You can't ignore them forever. Now, for me, as a young married guy, I was horrible at this because this was me. I literally thought when something came up, I wanted to fix it now. Not in a couple minutes, now. And I would badger my wife. And I'd literally follow her around like a puppy dog. Just like, let's fix this. What did I do wrong? What do you need? How do we fix this? What do you want? And she's just like, stop. I go, no, there's a problem. Why are you mad? What did I do? And we'd go through this over and over again. And I'd literally follow her through the house. We didn't have a very, very big house early on. There weren't that many rooms she could go to. And so I'd just follow her. And it took me years until I understood that in the way for her to process things, she literally needed time. That's not how my brain functioned. It's not how it worked. But it's exactly how it was the opposite of how she worked. And by me doing that, I made things 1,000 times worse than they ever were. And it took me, unfortunately, more years than I'd like to admit to finally rein it in and bite my tongue and kind of just go hide in a corner, because that's the only thing I could do to not get myself to going, how do I fix this? I go back into the same mentality. How do I resolve this? What do we need? What do we do? I just had to remove myself, and I didn't have to go that far because she was already running to the other side of the house like, just give me space. And I learned that, sometimes she needed hours. Sometimes she needed a couple days. She needed time. And I was not good at that because I needed it now. And what ended up happening, I created more tension than would have ever been in the first place. Because at the end of the day, sometimes by the next day coming through, what we realized together is it wasn't a big deal to begin with. But because of how I handled it, it became a much bigger deal than it ever had to be. And there's resentment that can be created, irritation, frustration. There's a whole long list of unhealthy things that can be created if we're not handling these situations. And so it's not the fact that we have to have this resolved within like a 10-hour period. God says you do need to handle these things. You do need to address them. But be wise about how you do this. And that's a key thing when we think about conflict resolution and working through things in a marriage. We have to use wisdom. Because what this is actually, the scripture is actually referring to is not harboring or nurturing any type of hatred, any type of anger. Not feeding into that anger that even gets worse than what the problem is itself. He's teaching us that we have to be careful because if we let that sit too long, it can become bitterness. And with that bitterness, it often becomes revenge. Because then we start looking at things of, well, you did this, so I'm going to do this. Or you squeezed the toothpaste bottle in the middle instead of rolling it from the end, so I'm going to leave toothpaste all in your sink because I know it drives you nuts. Right? That's the games that our mind starts playing really quickly of, you irritated me, I know this irritates you, so I'm going to do the same thing. We have to be very careful about where that takes us. Because that goes from a very unhealthy to an extremely unhealthy situation very quickly. And it happens without us even realizing it at times. What we find here is Paul's actually quoting David from Psalm 4:4. And it's it's natural to have these feelings of anger at times. We know God had anger. It's one of his character traits. But there is a righteous anger that he has that we sometimes go, oh, this is righteous anger. But it leads into something not so righteous. And then we have to rework and go, okay, that wasn't what I thought it was at all. We have to change who we are. But we have to find a way of not falling into that sinful attitude. Not falling into that trap of a sinful heart and a sinful mind. And find something constructive. Produce something constructive that's going to resolve the issue. That's going to fix the problems, fix the marriage. And the reality of relationships is sometimes the issues are so complex that it does take days, weeks, sometimes months. And it takes a whole lot of time praying. And sometimes you have to go and get counseling, whether it's from a minister, whether it's from a licensed professional. You need to get help from somewhere else. But you need to take time to think. Sometimes that just a few minutes of sitting back and thinking. You can write down Proverbs 15:23. It's a word spoken in due season, how good it is. A word spoken in due season, how good it is. It's all about timing. Timing is huge. Timing always matters. Because you can have the right words for a situation, but at the wrong time, it can make things worse. It can harm somebody. It can still do damage even though it's the right words. It can be 100% true, 100% honest, and accurate and complete. It just wasn't the right time. So sometimes taking a step back and using wisdom and waiting till emotions cool, the situation changes, that can have a huge impact on letting things cool down to make a situation better, to resolve. So speaking truth with gentleness and wise timing creates healing. Not division. It always creates healing. This is point number 5. I've done so good. I've been so good with my PowerPoints lately. This one slipped through. This is point number 5. Have fun together. Have fun together. It's pretty straightforward. When we think about fun, the things that we like to do, the things we like to do, the things we enjoy, it doesn't have to be overly complex. And sometimes we try to make it seem like it's harder than it needs to be, but it doesn't. Having fun. Skydiving is one of my dream things. there is not a day in this life that my wife would ever do that with me. But you can always hope, right? She'd be on the ground cheering me on as I either land gracefully or splat, one of the two. But she'd be there cheering me on nonetheless. God created laughter. It's another thing that we see about his character. Who he is, what he does. You can read all throughout the Bible, and there's so many stories that you just sit back and just chuckle, because we can see how crafty God is, how wise and smart he is, and how funny he is at times. Sometimes helping people along with some of the most obvious things as we're reading their story, but in the moment we know they were completely oblivious to everything and didn't really get it what was going on, but he's got a sense of humor. What happens in life, though, sometimes couples, as we live together, as we go through life together, as time goes on, we become business partners. We literally become business partners instead of companions, instead of being best friends. Because marriage does get tough at times, and as life goes on, it becomes more complex. We can't ever forget that marriage is no longer a single individual, one person. It is two people becoming one. And we have to have that unity throughout our entire marriage. We actually are part of one another. So don't ever lose that. Don't ever forget about that. If you would, turn back to Ecclesiastes 9:9. This is Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9. This verse presents a lifetime with one's wife in a very positive light, which helps to put Solomon's earlier statement about not finding a good woman in chapter 7 in kind of a fuller context here. When we think about Solomon failing to find a good woman, he had plenty to choose from, right? He went a little overboard in his selection process. I don't think anybody would ever disagree with that. But what we find is that he still counseled about the joy in marriage and being able to attain that. Now, it's one of God's greatest blessings that he's provided us as physical human beings and the physical relationships that we have. And so if we look at Ecclesiastes 9, pick this up in verse 9. It says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. Guys, please, do not write this in your next anniversary card. For your safety and mine, this is not the most eloquent way that we can tell our spouse that we love them, is it? Because it says, live joyfully with your wife all the days of your vain life that you've been given under the sun. All your days of vanity. That is your portion in life. And in the labor which you perform under the sun. Because you've done all these things. And then verse 10, he goes, and then you die and it doesn't matter. Don't write that in your anniversary card. But joy isn't optional in our relationships. It's not a question about this might be part of what our relationship should look like. We have to have that excitement. One, it keeps our heart soft. It keeps our hearts soft and enjoying things. And as life goes on, it gets more hectic. It gets more complex. Money, jobs, kids, managing debt, moving, selling houses, buying houses, health issues. Through all the noise, through all the situations, we can't lose the moments where we have fun together, where we laugh together. And Lizzie and I, we've been trying to get a date night for like 3 weeks now. We've been trying to figure it out. We'll get it one of these days, this week, if not this week, next week. Sooner than later, I promise. Sometimes life just catches up and things get crazy and busy, but we have to make it a priority. We have to be purposeful about making it happen because it kicks off the stress. It kicks the stress out of life, and we actually get to enjoy each other. Sometimes it's just sitting and holding hands. But we have to find that joy. You know, there's sometimes it's going to be a common activity of what you do that you both enjoy, that you find exciting. But there's also times that what you're going to do is what the other person likes. You know that they're going to have fun doing it, and so you're going to go sit through it, and you're going to put a happy face on, and you're going to have a good time. Because we're just different people. At the end of the day, half the time you end up enjoying it too. You found out you liked something you never knew you liked. But that has to be a priority. It has to be something that is built into our marriages, into our relationships. You know, we all have hope that we bring the best out in our spouse. I don't think anybody has ever gone into marriage going, well, this is going to be horrible. I don't think it's ever happened. I could be wrong. I could be mistaken. But we go into marriage thinking, this is going to be great. I'm excited. I do want to bring the best out my spouse. And it's not about just making this a checklist item, a to-do list. It becomes a result of several factors in our marriages, in our relationships, where we intentionally create healthy dynamics. And what we end up doing, we choose to leverage those healthy dynamics to create something positive, something godly, something that God would be proud of, that he would be excited for. And it takes time, it takes energy, and it takes a commitment. It takes being centered on God. Now, that's why we encourage our young adults to look to baptism before marriage. Because you need to be grounded in your relationship with God, otherwise there's this imbalance. Because what ends up happening in the relationship, we find ourselves looking to a physical person more than we do to God. There's an order that God should be first. That's why we have that encouragement, that commitment that we make to God. But we want to bring the best out in our spouses, not to make them perfect or flawless. You know, God does that through his mercy, through his grace, through his instructions. God knows how to get us there. God knows how to do that for us. And it's not even about having a conflict-free home, because that's just completely unrealistic. That it will never happen, because we are human beings filled with imperfect, where this world is filled with imperfect people. And so a conflict-free home is not possible. What is possible is working through that in a godly sense, in a godly manner. It's about being Christ-centered in how we love and how we speak, how we support, how we love one another, love our spouse, serve our spouse. We can create that. There's many principles throughout the Bible that talks about that strength in marriage. All these aspects of our character builds that up. I can create a list of just as many that tear it down, unfortunately. Probably more. There's probably more things out there that can destroy a marriage than building it up. But we have to be purposeful. So I'll leave you with these two questions. What are you going to build? What kind of relationships are you choosing to create?